Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you live a more positively minded life. And we are fascinated here. We love to learn. In the studio with me, my co-host, Sherry Siegel. Sherry, we're always on the hot subjects, huh? This one starts off with a curiosity, and it comes in sliding in with some amazing new discoveries. What is it that makes people attracted to violence, and are people attracted to it? Well, we came up with a scale. Some people like violence, some people don't like violence. In fact, if you think about it, some people love it. They love war movies. They love aggressive things. They love battles. They like to see it. They like boxing and wrestling and competition. They like hockey and stuff like that. Now, most WBAI people say, yeah, but that's all aggressive stuff, and it leads to violence. It leads people to become violent. It okays violence. So some people love it. Other people like it. They kind of say, yeah, show it to me, as long as it's not too heavy. Other people could take it or leave it. It doesn't matter much. Then there's the squirm response. Well, I see violence. I don't like it. And it makes me kind of feel icky, but I watch it anyway. And then there's the turn away from it. I can't see it. I don't want to see it. And then there's the absolute disgust. Don't ever show me anything with any violence in it. This includes the people who watch the Discovery Channel, and when the fox is chasing the rabbit, they feel terrible because they just don't want to see the fox catch the rabbit. And then there are the last group of people, who are the people who look away, but they peek. They see it, but they don't see it. Which are you? What do you feel about watching violence? And by violence, we'll use something about representing an aggressor and a victim, or some two people battling with each other where one is going to win. You know, do you like to watch gladiators fighting each other? Do you want to watch fish fighting each other? How do you feel about animals sparring off against each other? We say that's okay in nature, right? But it's not okay with people. So we wanted to understand it. What is it about this and watching this that runs a couple of industries, including the movie industry, right? Because in the movie industry, we have horror movies. And there are people who love horror movies. They want to go in there and they want to see a neck get lopped off. But we learned secrets about that. It isn't the horror they're attracted to, but it's the making you jump in your seat that they're attracted to. You see, a horror movie is only as good as you can anticipate what's going to happen. So when you hear that, that's not the part that gets you. That winds you up. But it's the actual jumping at you that you feel right down to your bones. Question is, what happens to us? So my first look at this is what happens to us chemically. I want to know what happens to our body. And for that, I asked Sherry and Lauren to do some research. Can you both tell me something about the chemistry? Sherry, tell me about the chemistry of what happens to a person when they are watching a violent scene.
Well, one of the things...
Wait a minute. Try again.
In our body.
Oh, you're not on. Look at this. Try it again. I'm missing your signal. One more.
We have a fight or flight response.
I fought with
our
that.
Bodies.
I fought with the microphones.
Thanks.
And I beat them up and I won.
I'm so glad you
for
did
you.
That.
Oh, that's another one.
See, there's a little violence.
But you see, championing, that's yes. Another form of violence.
I think if you break down violence, you can separate different types of violence. There's violence when two peers fight each other. That's a different story from those who have violence against a victim. Someone who's clearly, who outshines somebody and
who's going to eat them up.
And so that, I think
how about
have different
responses.
How about
somebody who's going to eat up the one that they eat?
Yeah.
The one that they're fighting?
Yes. So in the body, one of the responses is the well-known fight or flight response.
We're going to get to that later. But let's talk about the physical characteristics of what happens. The physical one, dopamine, what happens to the neurochemicals?
Well, the same ones as in fight or flight. The norepinephrine, the adrenaline, those are the things that...
The norepinephrine, the adrenaline. These are things that are in our body. These are what? Are they there?
These are hormones that are actually housed in our adrenal glands, which sit on top of our kidneys. And so our brain says danger or fight. A lot of times we put ourselves in the place of the people having the fight or the people who are about to be attacked by the monster.
But back to the chemicals. The chemicals, you get adrenaline. What does adrenaline do for you?
It puts you on alert. It wakes up your senses.
Doesn't it speed up your heart?
It speeds up your heart, yes,
it
does.
What else does it do, adrenaline?
Increases your blood pressure.
Good, 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 good. So now I'm beginning to understand. What does noradrenaline do?
It does just the same things that you talked about.
What's the difference between adrenaline and noradrenaline, do you know? Yeah, I don't know either. I wonder why we always use both. How about cortisol?
Cortisol is another hormone, and it basically all these things together form a concert in the body.
What does the cortisol do?
It shuts down, the body shuts down, it's parasympathetic or it's relaxing.
Now, isn't cortisol like cortisol has an energy to it, doesn't it? Because people who feel cortisol responsive, if you take somebody's cortisol away, don't they get flat feelings?
There's a sense of well-being with cortisol.
Okay. And what other things happen in the body? The physical responses.
Well, our vision, our pupils constrict so that we can see things at a distance. Blood goes to our muscles and away from our GI tract so that we don't have to digest the food that we've just
eaten. So that's all happening if you're watching violence or if you're in violence.
Well, very often people who watch violence have the same body sensations and the body reactions that those who are actually undergoing a violent fight can have.
But there are two parts to a violent fight. You could either be the victim, you could be somebody who is defending themselves, or somebody who's attacking. And we're going to get back to that because we found something in the fight or flight response that's remarkably unaddressed. Let's stick with violence for a minute. Violence. What different kinds of, what else do we know about violence? Right? What do we know about it? We have a normal distribution curve of sensation seeking through the human population. Marvin Zuckerman, look him up. And if you Google him, Marvin Zuckerman, you're going to find a sensation seeking scale in the 1970s. He said, some of us have an addictive need for sensational stimulation. Some of us avoid it at all costs. Most of us lie somewhere in between. Males are more likely to seek sensation through aggressive physical activity and by watching on-screen violence. Televised sports, especially high-contact sports, all cater to the male need for physical, often violent stimulation. So one wonders, what is it in nature that built us so that we would want to watch another in battle? We could make it up. I mean, I can make up a theory. But one wonders, and if you look on the inside chemistry, and probably if we were able to do a brain scan, we would learn that there are parts of us that build from doing it. There are parts of us that get stronger from doing it. But it's not the part of us as much that would kill. Maybe there's something else we want to understand, and that's what today's show is about. Today's program is getting to understand what we get from watching it. Here's what I believe, just as a judgment, and I have very few. Loving violence to the point where you would never escape or miss for a minute a chance to see something being killed or ripped apart. Or the absolute aversion to violence, which is you can't stand and you get sick and it makes you scared and frightened and you run away whenever you see any form of violence. Both, to me, are reflective of some psychological rather than physiological phenomenon going on. That probably you have a history with violence. That probably there's some part of you that has an aversion to it. Like, passive-aggressive people. they're always afraid of anger. They're afraid of their own anger. So they may have an aversion to all forms of violence. That's kind of interesting because they used to call the love generation, the 70s, passive-aggressive people. And what they would do is they would all fight violence. They opposed violence. But what they had, what was called passive-aggressiveness, which is I will use my aggression in a different way, like being late and not doing what you expect me to do, and those other things. So we're trying to get to understand it. We know a lot about it. We're trying to get you to understand yourself is really remarkable. You know, you think about violence, and we don't think about certain times that we are violent. Do you get violent when you kill a chicken? No, but do you get violent when you eat a chicken? Do you understand the violence behind it? Some people do. They call themselves, they go as far as to say, I'm only going to eat macrobiotic. Well, what about somebody who kills a cockroach? Hey, what do we know about cockroaches anyway? Lauren, you actually went as far as to find out what happens to cockroaches, didn't you?
Yes.
Tell me what you found out.
Well, basically...
I don't hear Lauren. Why is this happening? You're on the fourth mic. Go to the third mic. Here you go. Go ahead.
Okay. So basically, cockroaches, they anticipate their predator, which would just be us with our shoe out. So what they do is they scatter in different angles. So the best way to combat cockroaches would be to anticipate these angles that they would be scattering into.
They scatter?
Yes.
I wonder why they scatter rather than run in a straight line. You know, they scatter because some part of them realize that if you have to chase them in one direction, the rest of the group is going to survive. Probably like answers. So there's a defense. There's a mechanism. But we, as humans, we swat a fly or swat a mosquito and kill it. I feel bad when I do it, but it's still a violent act.
It's a violent act against a victim.
A sentient being.
That's right.
Who only wants my blood. A mosquito. Right? So there is something about us that is attracted to violence. Are we designed? Does it do something to it? Does it give the average hunter more testosterone? Maybe it does. Maybe it activates testosterone.
It helps. It helps in ways to practice for moments when violence might be against us. So in some ways, by watching violence, we prepare ourselves, our bodies, and our brains for the possibility that that could happen to me.
So you think the gyms, going to a gym and working out on a machine helps you in some way unconsciously. You're saying to yourself, I'm going to be stronger in case I ever get in battle. You think there's an unconscious thought that I need this, I need not only to buff up because I want to attract somebody, but this makes me feel good because it makes me stronger, because if I ever do get into a violent thing, I could take care of myself better.
Well, I think it is a lot to impress someone of the other gender, but I think the things that other genders like to see are things that make, say, for example, for the males to be buff, to be strong, and potentially able to protect them, or able to go out and, you know, grab an animal and you know, use them for food. So they're very much interconnected.
In nature, I was, again, my insect TV shows. So I was watching a show about insects, and I'm watching insects, how a female insect will sit on a vine and wait to see all the male insects of her species compete with each other. Well, butterflies do it. Everybody does it, you know. And they're competing to see who looks strongest. Because what she wants is she wants the genes from the strongest one. Because she believes that one is going to be a better survivor. So, which leads us to the fact that violence or being able to be aggressive may be genetic. What have we found about the genetics of this?
Well, there are genes that help with serotonin. Serotonin is one of our body chemicals that helps with the sense of well-being. But it's known that when those genes are absent, the lack of serotonin can predispose a person to violence. Also, we know that when there's low GABA, which is an inhibitory brain chemical and low serotonin, those are both, that combination is associated with violence and aggression.
So what happens to people when they have low GABA?
Well,
what would that be typical of? Would that be typical of an ailment?
Since it's an inhibitory neurotransmitter, sometimes it's involved. For example, in sometimes seizure disorders, people take GABA-type medicines to help them prevent seizures, because if your brain is emitting, let's just say it's activating, it comes to a scar, and the brain doesn't inhibit the activity that it comes to when it gets to that scar, one is prone to having a seizure. But if you take a medication that inhibits GABA, then the seizure hopefully will not happen.
This is Armand DeMille with Sherry Siegel and our assistant Lauren Sykes. Today we are talking about the attraction of violence and the attraction of violence. But this is not the whole story. We found something else. We always talk about watching violent episodes, violent things. But you know, there are two parts to everything that's violent when there's a battle or when there's a victim. There's a part that is the attacker, and there's a part that is the one that escapes. Escape, such an interesting word. We did research, as Sherry said before, and we found that the fight-flight reaction is the reaction inside us that prepares us for battle and for getting away. But here's what we did. We tried to find the flight reaction and isolate it from the fight reaction. Is it the same? Is the fight reaction the same as the flight reaction? Is your body the same? Well, absolutely not. Because we know when you're in a fight reaction, it's your upper body strength that counts the most. You got to use your arms. You got to wield your power from the top. Use your head, your neck, your teeth. It's all up on top of you, right? In a flight reaction, it's you get those legs a running. It's the lower half of your body in most animals that functions in a flight reaction. So wait, if two parts of the musculature are different, are two parts of the chemistry different? Is there more fear when you're running away than when you're attacking? Absolutely. Because when you're attacking, you may be afraid, but you overcome that fear with this powerful driving aggression. But when you're running away, you're just scared. I mean, if somebody says to you there's a tsunami heading in your direction, boom, you're going in terror up that mountain. Legs do your stuff. But if somebody says to you you have to fight for your children, you're going in there with full force, and you're using your mind, you're using your aggression, and you're using your brain. So the fight reaction and the flight reaction are two distinct units. But nowhere in our research could we find them isolated. What is the flight reaction? Well, my friends, for the first time, you're hearing it here. We believe there is a flight reaction. And we believe that part of what's going on in every observation of aggression and violence is two things. The fight and the flight as two separate entities. Why do you want to look at your flight reaction? What is your flight reaction? Are you an escapist? You understand every human needs the ability to escape. Everybody wants to know how they can get out of a room. Right? If you see a door, you spot where the door is. You're going to say to yourself, there's the door in case I have to go. You go into an airplane. They tell you where the exits are. Everybody always wants to know the way out. They want to have it somewhere in their brain. And yet, science has not studied the psychology of the exit door. So we've got something new to look at. So we began looking at this. How many places does it affect us? Where is your flight reaction? Think about your relationships. Think about what happens if he leaves me. What happens if I don't have it anymore? What happens if I lose my job? What's my escape? We think about it all the time.
I think we think about leaving. Sometimes people get into a relationship with one foot out the door. They get in really half-heartedly, as they say. Sometimes we take a job and can't wait to leave. Certainly can't wait to leave at the end of the day, at the end of the week, escape, leave on vacation. But sometimes we even go into jobs thinking, we can't wait to leave. This is just a temporary situation.
So our escape door is right there, Sherry, you know? And it's when we think about escape door, let's think about video games. Lauren, you used to play video games.
Yes.
Is escape have anything to do with video games?
Of course. That's the primary focus, to be able to escape the first level to get to the next level.
See, escape what? Escape being eaten, blown up, destroyed?
Escape being attacked, escape. Exactly.
Like which? Give me a video game where that comes into play.
Well, for example, I remember playing Lion King. And so the main thing was you were Simba, you were the little baby cub, and it was escaping, you know, the Mufasa's brother. So it was escaping the hyenas, escaping the uncle, which would be, you know, just trying to attack you. So it's basically trying to escape the dangers of life and the dangers of others.
And you used to play that game all the time?
Yes.
How many levels did you get?
I completed the game.
You got all the way up to the top and yeah. You escaped completely. Now, let me ask you something. In this game called Lion King, mm-hmm. The baby being eaten by his uncle, mm-hmm. Did it have any aggression? Did the little baby lion kill anybody?
Yeah, you had to fight back. You had to fight back in order to escape.
So it wasn't just running away?
No.
I guess there is no just running away video game mm-hmm. Because they want both energies, attack and run. Wow, this is getting fascinating.
You know, and I think in the midst of a potential danger, the brain, the cortex, the higher thinking area of the brain is always measuring, do I fight, do I flee? Do I fight, do I flee? Fight for a while, then run. Run for a while, then fight back. So that's an ongoing calculation that the higher brain makes.
But it's two systems. It's not one system, which is what people do. I want to stop talking about the fight reaction and talk about the flight reaction. The flight reaction is ignored, yet it seems to be a powerful one. Let's think about it. Think about horror movies. When you're in a horror movie, what do you think about? How's she going to get away? You know, I mean, the victim never really gets killed. I mean, the protagonist, right? She gets almost escapes. You know, and then there's the thing about the killer. Like, I don't know which one it is, the guy with the ski mask, what is he?
Jason.
Yeah, Jason, right? So Jason, you think Jason is dead, and then he appears again. And then you think he's dead, and he appears again. And so even the killer escapes, and you're fascinated by how he escapes. No, we love escapes. We love it. And I think, you know, we have in psychology, we have defense mechanisms, which are fascinating. I think escape mechanisms, the mechanism of our personal escapes is vital. What about you who are in love relationships? What do you do to escape the anger that you feel, the pressure that you feel? How do you keep yourself out of it? You lie, you cheat, you thwart yourself, you take on other hobbies, you do other things, you divert yourself in so many ways. It's all about being able to get away. I think getting away is more important to most humans than attacking is. Because I think in attacking, we too easily can become a target. We can too easily lose a battle. But if we escape everything, we can never really lose, you see? And I think most people are spending their time escaping. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Kind of a fascinating idea when you think about it. You know, one of the interesting things about children who observe their parents having sex, they always say they thought they were hurting each other. If you ever look at the faces of people who are having sex, it looks like it's a violent act. But in a way, it seems to be the greatest of all escapes. Maybe that's where it combines. Maybe that's where both of them combine. I don't know. It's interesting, but we're going to be asking you about this later, and we're going to be talking more about it. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back from our short break, we will be continuing with this interesting information about this, why we love violence. And again, my friends, you got to step back from the judgment. The ethic of it, please don't call me saying, because if you watch violence, you're going to become violent. Step out of the intellectual part of it. Try to step into the body part of it. I think there's fascinating stuff for us to learn. We'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes, my friend. This is Armand DeMille. Be right back. Before the show, get everything ready for it, okay? All right, it's too late now. Okey-dokey. First time. Ah, I always get everything ready before the show. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5. You can't get everything ready before the show. You can't. There's so much stuff. Every time you try to prepare yourself for what you're going to do in life, you try to anticipate everything. You know the nervous Nellies? Nervous Nellies are people who get nervous because they're anticipating going to have to be in some kind of a battle. And that's it. You got two questions going on. Number one, how are you going to win the battle? But how are you going to get out of it? One of the worst things in the world that happened to people is when the IRS sends you a letter. Your question is, how am I going to get out of this? You get sued. How am I going to get out of this? Getting away is so important. Somebody starts screaming at you, how can I get away? Very few people welcome somebody screaming at them saying, how am I going to beat that person up? How am I going to get away with it? You know, flies start biting you. How can I get out of here? Cold starts coming after you. How do I get out of here? The weather. How do I get out of here? It's raining. How do I get out of the rain? It's too hot. How do I escape the heat? This is a primary question in the human brain and every animal's brain. How do I get away from it when I want to? So think about that in your own life. Where's your escape clause? You know? What is your escape? Fantasy? Fantasy's a good escape. Meditation's a good escape. Those work. I don't like what I'm feeling, so I'll meditate. I'll change my mind. I don't like who I'm loving, so I'll find somebody else.
Addiction is an escape for some people.
How does that work?
Using drugs, using food, gambling, consuming things. It's an escape from the discomfort of what is.
So the discomfort of what is doesn't necessarily have to be an attack. It could be a consistent thing, right? You could be constant ache of waking up in the morning and going to work. Boy, you'd rather oversleep. You know, your body says, nah, go late. You know, be late. Don't get there on time. Get fired so that you won't ever have to go to work. You know, it's a common thing with people who are late for work to get fired.
It's a passive-aggressive act.
Right, but then they get fired and they don't ever have to show up on time again, you know. For that little period of time, then they get another job, then they get fired, and they have to show up again. It's such a thing. So it's your way of escaping. So you show me people who are passive-aggressive, and I'll show you escape artists. I'll show you people who know how to get away, people who know how to stay out of the limelight. Because, you know, a passive-aggressive person is saying the same thing. I would lose in a one-to-one battle, so I won't take it on directly. I'll take it on indirectly, and I'll fight from the sidelines. I'll fight in a way that makes you powerless to hurt me. You know, you ever notice when people are, they forget to do something, so they apologize, and they apologize and apologize and apologize, then they beat themselves up. What's wrong with me? How could I do it? So now they're beating themselves up so you can't beat them up. Because you've occupied all the space hitting yourself over the head with your shoe, they can't hit you with their shoe. Because you've occupied all the space blaming yourself. Self-blame is a way of stopping people from punishing you.
Right. It elicits empathy in the observer.
At the same time, right. Makes them feel bad for being mad at you.
Exactly.
Right? What a good weapon. There's an escape weapon.
It's brilliant.
Right?
It's a brilliant defense mechanism.
We humans. We're amazing. So how do you escape? And escaping is, on, like we said, on two sides. Now, you said before we had something further on aggression and violence.
Well, it made me wonder how violence gets created in the body, in the brain. How does a child who is born in a very kind and loving family, for example, how does somebody like that become violent? But sometimes what happens is there's a kind of battle between the lower brain, which is your lizard or animal brain, and your cortex, which is your analytical thinking brain. The lower brain has impulses, and the impulses are constantly coming up and bombarding the body and the brain with the upper brain with them. What happens with the upper brain is it modulates. And it tells the lower brain, this is not a good time to punch the teacher. This is not a good time to take the money, for example. So if a child comes up in a family where there's not a lot of nurturing or where there's violence, the upper brain finds that this is okay. So it doesn't modulate the lower brain in the way that a healthy brain would modulate it. So that's one of the ways that the brain participates in creating violence in a child. It's really an important developmental portion.
Good. It is important developmentally. And so we have this ability on our side to repeat what we've seen before, you know? Sherry, so if we grow up in an environment where we've watched people punishing people, for example, you know, spankers, parents who punished their kids, were punished as kids. So there is something more than genetic. There is something learned about passing the violence along. But there is also something about the violence itself that is positive. Otherwise, we would not repeat it. If I get frustrated and I become violent, I am at least releasing some of the pressure inside me from this frustration that I have about not being able to do things or get what I want. And so violence is often a release. And we like it. We're attracted to it. I mean, just think about Indiana Jones movies. People love Indiana Jones movies. And in Indiana Jones movies, there are killings. Death. Why are you saying something about the comedic value of watching violence, Lauren?
Yes, the comedic value. I think it's definitely over time, I feel like violence has gone into a medium where it's happy violence. You don't really see the consequences, and it's made to be funny.
So when you watch somebody shot in a movie, you don't see anything really happening to them. You see them laying on the ground with a red spot on their chest or something. Mm-hmm. And so you'll watch something like Bruce Willis, you know, in a Bruce Willis movie where 100 people will be shot or killed. And you laugh at the jokes in between.
Or Roadrunner cartoons. I mean, the Roadrunner is constantly being blown up or hit by irons or squished by rocks. And it's incredibly violent.
But he escapes.
But he escapes.
There's the escape thing. See, the Roadrunner is a great escapist. In fact, Roadrunner is escapist.
And he flees very well.
He flees very fast. So so movies could be funny. We've humorized them somewhat. Or they become glamorous. Right now, what's glamorous violence?
I would say a perfect example of that would be Scarface. Even though there was the inevitable downfall, while he was, you know, killing and doing violent things off the drug empire, he was still reaping the benefits. He was driving the fancy cars. He had the pretty trophy wife, stylish suits. So it was made to be glamorized and stylized.
So our picturing a lot of the drug lords is glamorous violence, right? And them choosing to wear certain clothing and to look like they're the top of the heap and drive the fanciest cars and have the prettiest girls. Glamour and violence.
Sopranos. If you think about the Sopranos, there was wealth, there was power, and at the end of every episode, if not during the episode, there was unbelievable physical violence.
But where was the glamour in the Sopranos? I didn't see glamour.
Well, I think they lived glamorous.
I saw the wives had glamorous, but usually the men were downplaying glamour. They were ordinary. I think part of what I remember about the Sicilian culture, and I talk about that because I came from it, was that you always downplayed your power. You always didn't let anybody see it. You didn't want to it wasn't like wearing bling. Now, there's another part of glamorous violence. When you see guys who are, you know, pimps or drug dealers wearing gold around their neck, right, and sporting that kind of stuff, that's glamorous violence. But on the other hand, how good are they at escaping? Sometimes you have to make yourself so strong, like an alpha gorilla. You make yourself so big and so strong that you can't move. So you're just going to sit there and fight off everybody. But you have no hope of retreating. So if you don't believe that you have an escape clause, sometimes you have to become over-violent. An interesting concept. People who tend to be compulsively violent may not know that they could get away. Maybe part of the reason why you kill everything in sight and hurt everything in your vision is because you don't believe you could get away. If you believe you have both talents, the ability to escape and the ability to aggress, I think you have a better balance, an easier balance.
Well, clearly, because if your body isn't able to fight off an aggressor, and you're able to run away, well, you have a better chance of surviving. But if at the same time you're also able to fight someone off, well, then you have the best of both worlds.
You know, we did some research on video, right, and watching violence in children. What did you find, Lauren?
I found that basically research shows that majority of kids that would watch these violent images on on TV or in the media were also, they also had similar brain activity to those children that have disrupted, that have been diagnosed with disruptive disorders.
So therefore the TV violence is causing it?
Not that it's causing it, but it, that it's predisposing them to it, and they're desensitized to it.
What do you think, Sherry?
Well, they have done studies with fMRI, which is a functional MRI scan of the brain, which shows that there are abnormalities in the frontal lobe, which is the what they call the executive part of the brain that says this is okay to do or this is not. And they find that people who have an aggressive background have abnormalities or differences in their frontal lobes.
Okay.
And certainly the same, and actually the same pattern will show up when people are shown videos or television that has a lot of violence and aggression. The same change in brain pattern will happen to people shown these aggressive acts on television.
But you know, now yes, that, but what do we prefer in news? The entire world, all news is about violence.
If it bleeds, it leads.
Right, and that's it. If it bleeds, it leads. We even the weather is considered violent, right? Storms are ripping through, tornadoes tore through. We are attracted to violence. It can't cause the bad weather. Do you know what I mean? It can't cause the reporting on it or the watching of it. Cannot be the cause. I know that everybody wants to make a case for it. I know that people want to make a case for, well, Fox News makes you want to go out and kill people. I don't believe it. I believe it may activate certain parts of our chemicals. But I believe that we are born with two things, the ability to aggress violently if necessary, and the ability to escape. And I think we need both of those tools, and I think we need to be reminded of it. And I think sometimes when you live a sloppy lifestyle, or a lifestyle which is just, you know, where you're getting by day to day, and working day to day, and working in an office, you have fantasies of violence. You have fantasies of doing something highly aggressive, or you have fantasies of getting away.
And I think when we hear these bleeding lead articles on the news, it also it says pay attention. Our bodies and our brains say pay attention to this. You could be in danger. Mm-hmm. So that puts us on guard.
Oh.
It makes us want to watch more and be sure that we're safe.
Well, there it is again. I thought it was the violence we were attracted to when they say to you, watch out for that storm. No, it's the escape. It's the flight reaction that they're talking to. Yes, we have a new way of manipulating you. We're going to manipulate your flight reaction. It's a good thing. I'm telling you, I know we're talking about it for the first time because I haven't heard anybody else talk about this. But wait till the... Where do they start picking up on this and using it for advertising? If we can manipulate your flight reaction, we will be able to sell you more product. Sunscreen. What's that about? Right? Sunscreen is about watch out. Be scared. You could escape the sun rays. And all the things are about protecting nutrition. All about protect yourself. Protect yourself, get away, escape. Not so much win, become the top of the heap. You know, I mean, no nutritionist ever said, take vitamin C and you can be more powerful than your brother. No, take vitamin C and you won't get a cold.
You reminded me of a place where there's sometimes very little escape and your ability to escape is manipulated. If you go to Las Vegas and you go to one of the casinos, and I'm sure that would be the same in almost any casino, I don't know if you've ever tried to get out of a casino, but for some reason it's very difficult to leave a casino. It's dark, the exits are not well lit up. And I think it's because they really want you to continue to stay there and not leave, so that the your ability to leave is definitely being manipulated.
It's almost as if it's a maze. You're just stuck in the casino.
Yes.
Which doesn't make them bad. You know what I mean? It's, again, you know, we want to blame all the people who manipulate this. It doesn't make a bed. We want to be stuck. That's why we go in the maze. What are you doing going in a maze if you don't want to not find the exit?
They want to sell you their machines and the gambling. That makes complete sense.
And we want to buy it.
They're marketing well.
And we want to buy it. So there are no bad guys out there. They're just guys who are saying, you want to be part of the system? You're part of the system. Right? You want to be part of it? Want me to build a maze that you can't get out of? I will build a casino bigger than all casinos, and I will lure you towards the middle of it. And then when I get you in the middle, you'll find a hard way getting out, and you're going to like it just like that.
Right.
Because nobody leaves a casino crying, I couldn't find the exit. They don't. This is Armand DeMille with Sherry Siegel, Lauren Sykes. Nature is funny about escape. Nature is so funny because if you think about every flower, what does a flower do if the rain comes hard? They have defenses. Every tree has a defense. You're right? It could either sway or it could cover itself. I mean, every animal in nature, every piece of nature has a way of escaping should something bad happen. We have exits. And I think we have to pay attention to our exits more. And I want you, the people listening, to think about your exit strategies. Some of you pick fights. You have a relationship with somebody and you're loving somebody and you're getting really close. You get so close that when you sleep together, you just get the feeling, I don't want to leave this person ever. You know, and you're laying in each other's arms and you get this, the next thing you do, you're picking a fight with them. Why? Because some part of you felt too vulnerable being close to that person. And you dropped down to a level of vulnerability that violated your survival. It said, hey, you know, this person, they could eat you up. This person could be dangerous. You've never allowed anybody in this close. So you start a fight. You fight about something silly. Like, who's going to buy the toothpaste this week? I bought it last week. No, I bought it this week. And then you get into a fight. It's all about the escape. The great escape. We each have it. Every one of us have it. What is your escape? So what I'd like you to do is make a notes of the ways that you get away. And Sherry and I and Lauren are going to research this more because we want to be able to develop this thought. I think it's much bigger than what we're saying here. The fight-flight response. Look it up on the internet. You cannot find flight response without looking at fight response. They lump them together. They say it's the same thing. It's not the same thing, and we know it. So my question to you is, how do you escape? What do you do? And what I would like you to do is to write down the ways that you find your exits. I know a man used to tell me every time he ever went to bed, he always kept his socks on when he went to bed with his girlfriend. And I said, why? And we analyzed it. So he could get away because he didn't like running away in his bare feet. Other people I know, when they're in a room, they want to keep a door open. You know, you never want to have all the lights out. Those are all flight fears. I got to have my exit marked. Fascinating stuff. Fascinating stuff. We're going to be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends, with more interesting stuff. And tomorrow we will be taking your calls, talking about this and anything else that we bring up. Sherry? So this is, find this fascinating, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. It's anything that is a function of the brain-body combination, the mind-body connection, really fascinating.
Yeah. And Lauren, I want to thank you very much for your help with us today.
Thank you.
Okay, be back with you all tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends. Send me an email, armand@brainlink.com. Thank you.
so weary blues. Can't get into my shoes because my shoes refuse to ever grow weary. I keep cheerful, on an earful of music sweet.